Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Cartoonist Charles Adams' work is best known for the creation that slowly evolved into what was known as the family, a slightly dark, ghoulish family that were exactly like us in mid-century America, but not. Thanks to the 60s television series, later the films and musical, we now know this creation as the Adams Family. But the family was only a small part of the work of this subversive, slightly macabre cartoonist, whose work was a regular feature of the New Yorker magazine for over 40 years. The Zero Center has been featuring the work of Charles Adams, including some of his most famous and reproduced cartoons in the exhibit Charles Adams, Family and Friends, which is on display through September 27th. If you've yet to see the over 50 cartoons featuring both the Adams family and some of his most popular thematic areas, this Friday's Brady Art Crawl offers a great opportunity. My guest today is Kevin Mizoraki, the executive director of the T. and Charles Adams Foundation, which works to keep Adams' work before the public. He'll be in Tulsa the following Friday, September 11th at noon at the Zero Center for a brown bag lecture. And he joins us today by phone here on Studio Tulsa. Kevin Mizoraki, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
And thank you very much for having me, Rich.
This exhibit, Charles Adams, Family and Friends, just puts a sampling of some of the incredible work that Charles Adams did for The New Yorker and many other publications, his own publications over the years, about this wonderfully talented, dark, macabre, hilarious cartoonist. How did this exhibit come about? As part of the Adams Foundation, are you trying to make sure that this work continues to be seen by new audiences?
Yes, that's our primary promise to the IRS as a not-for-profit is to educate the public through exhibition. So this is an ongoing event among other activities that we do. And it so happened that I was able to meet the person who's the director of the Tulsa Girls Art School, Matt Moffitt, through some other friends, just to come down to Tulsa on our way out west to see what was going on there. And I was very, very impressed with what they're doing. And we, a year and a half in the planning, or almost 2 years, we actually decided to have an exhibition that they could use for several different purposes, including a fundraiser that happens in November. So it all is sort of tied together, even though the exhibition is going to be separated by a month from their event.
Now, the Zero exhibit features about 52 cartoons by Adams. Some in color and others typically, I assume, the typical artwork that he would submit for a New Yorker cartoon. But there are also about four or five pieces that are used as prompts for the Tulsa Girls Art School, in which they sort of riff on the original cartoon. And one of them is probably one of Adams' most famous cartoons that probably people don't associate with him, and it's called Unicorns.
Yes.
Which just shows the ark leaving in the water, and the unicorns looking out at it.
Right. I mean, Charlie liked to do that, to explain the obvious. You know, the reason why we don't have any unicorns is because they missed the ark. And the Tulsa Girls Art School were given nothing more than the mention of or description of five cartoons from which to choose their choice. And then they executed those drawings, having learned for the whole week of how to sketch, draw, use a quill pen in dip ink and not ballpoint and whatever, and how to do shading and all of that, wash, all techniques. And then for the exhibition, that was the first time the girls were able to see what their artwork was based on, Charles Adams' version hanging on the wall next to their version. So it's really wonderful for kids to have their work framed and hanging in a gallery.
Yeah. Now, you knew Charles Adams, I guess, about the last 10 years or so of his life. For those who don't know Charles Adams other than the image of the Adams family, which, of course, is translated to television and film, tell us a little bit more about Charles Adams.
He was a really wonderful person, and for all the press that went on since he started at The New Yorker in 1938, the press always treated him as a strange man, ooky, creepy. Any of the words from the Adams Family theme music by Vic Mizzi that you want to use are what were used to describe him. In truth, he was a wonderfully shy, sweet man with a little bit off-center sense of humor, perhaps. We should put it that way. But he was genuinely a wonderful artist from a very early time in his life.
Mm-hmm. What drew him to cartooning particularly? Do we know?
We do know a bit because we have a lot of his cartoons as a child, plus I actually spoke with him, knowing him the last 10 years of his life. But he did cartoons of actually World War I and was very interested in all of the reports that came in, as were most of the world, who operated by radio and not television. And he did a lot of battle cartoons and a lot of things about machinery and locomotives and weaponry, which of course ended up being something in his personal life later on. He collected a fantastic collection of suits of armor and crossbows and all sorts of weaponry that were auctioned off to collectors upon his death.
Well, why did he have this creepy image? I mean, it obviously comes through, he has a macabre sense of humor, but if he was not like that in private life, why did this image, did he sort of draw on that as a way of getting attention, or what exactly?
I think it came more about that he was fascinated with, in particular, with death. Not the thrill of dying, but that there was such a thing. He lived in a very normal American town in New Jersey, but it was filled with Gothic homes that were in ruin and no one living in them, and several cemeteries on his way to school that he would pass. And he just found himself appreciating the art. I mean, there is art in cemeteries and the shrines that people built. And he found himself actually wondering what people looked like who were underneath those shrines. So, he might be a little bit of a twisted child in one sense, but actually not. He just wasn't afraid to admit that he thought about it.
Now, one of his first jobs as a commercial artist was working for True Detective magazine. Is that right?
Yes. Illustrating, you know, death scenes, basically, where the bodies lay and things like that. It was an unusual occupation, but he was certainly capable of doing it. It wasn't what he wanted to do, but it was leading him to the road of the New Yorker, which is what he that was the craw. He wanted to get to the New Yorker however possible.
Yeah, I think one time he wrote, he said, one of his jobs was, if it was a photograph, it was to remove the blood from the crime scene photo. And he said, you know, a lot of those photos were better the way they were.
And, you know, if you think about it, all of this, you know, devotion to the oddities and murder and mayhem and whatever, if you really examine Charles Adams' work, he never shows a bit of blood. Then there's
right.
never a real bludgeoning. There's a suggestion of terror. And that's what I think makes it work really well, is we're so graphic today, we wouldn't dream of not being able to understand something unless you were shown the decapitation, where Charlie can just suggest it. And so there's humor in that instead of being gory.
Now, were there people that were offended by these cartoons when they first came out, or did people always get the joke? Because we think of it as a simpler time, but The New Yorker is always a sophisticated humor and magazine.
And there were plenty of people who didn't understand certain cartoons or questioned the validity of the subject matter. We do have copies of every single letter that was responded to by The New Yorker. At least copies were given to Charlie, because he didn't have to respond necessarily if it was sent to the editorial division, of questioning why this cartoon was presented and who thought it was funny. Most people, those are just isolated situations. There was a lot of fan mail, more so than disagreement with them publishing a certain drawing.
In the exhibit, there's about 52 pieces of work. Some are devoted to the Adams family. When did the Adams family actually develop?
Well, it was never called such. You know, the first cartoon that ever appeared that became the Adams family was in 1938, which was of the character who became known as Lurch, as the butler, and Morticia with a vacuum cleaner salesman. And the vacuum cleaner salesman is trying to sell them the idea that it's vibrationless and silent, and every wonderful home should have one. And, you know, there's bats flying around inside the house and its decrepitude. So, I mean, as though they would really want to buy a vacuum cleaner. But it developed from there that he just kept doing this family, and it wasn't necessarily a family. It were just characters that would meet on different stages. And by the 60s, a couple of brothers who were in Hollywood production saw one of his books in the store window on Fifth Avenue and said, we ought to do a TV show on those people. And hence the rest is history.
And at that point, it became the Addams Family. It really was never set up as the Addams Family until the television show, I guess.
Not at all, and they didn't know what to do. They had no idea what to call the family or what to name the show, and eventually asked Charlie if he minded if they called it the Addams Family. They didn't know what else to do, and he acquiesced, but he was not happy with that. He was a quiet, reserved man behind the scenes and didn't like that front row recognition at all. So, and also it was a television program. He didn't really particularly care. He was an artist. He was flattered, but it was not a great contract. He didn't make any money off of that. And here, all these years later, there should be residuals flowing from that, and there aren't. So
interesting. When we think of Charles Addams, we think of those cartoons about the family. But it was only a small part of a very small part of his complete output.
Yeah, it is. We've actually published a book 5 years ago that is titled The Addams Family and Evolution. And it, you know, gets rid of a lot of the rumors about things that happen with the family and who's based on what and all that characterization. But what it also points out is that of the 4,000 to 5,000 published pieces of work, which include advertising and everything you can think of, only 150 were ever published of the Addams Family. And of that, only half of them were in The New Yorker. When the television program came in 1964, the editor at that time of The New Yorker refused to allow any Addams Family cartoons to be published.
Because it was based, probably.
It was too. It just wasn't New Yorker material anymore. It was TV, and that was that other thing over there in the corner that you don't pay attention to.
Right, exactly.
It wasn't literate. So, and then once that went off the air, meaning once the second season folded, then he was able to submit Addams Family drawings again.
Well, you know, some of the best of the drawings of the family involve, you know, everyday home scenes, the suburban home scenes. I'm thinking of one that's in the exhibit particularly. It's Morticia and Gomez are going out for the evening. They have the unpresuming babysitter, and it's, you know, put the kids to bed by 8 and keep your back to the wall at all times.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's the interesting thing about the Addams Family. For all that they were ever used in press to make us understand that they were really strange, Charlie didn't think they were strange at all. They were doing exactly what all of us out here in the other world were doing, is raising families and sending them to school and making meals and making sure they were comfortable in their beds and all that. And he just really wanted to make us understand that, you know, we should really not judge a book by its cover. Just because they live in the dark side didn't mean they weren't worthy of recognition. A very interesting ploy that he used to represent that the dark side isn't always such a bad side. It just meant, let's not judge them for that.
Right. And the other thing that comes out from some of the cartoons you see in this exhibit is how little the television writers worked to develop the character, because the characters, I mean, they basically took his cartoons and didn't do a whole lot of work with the characters beyond what the cartoons gave them.
Right. And remember, it was 1964. It had a laugh track. The laugh track told us what we were supposed to think was funny or amusing. And it was always comparing the outside world with their inside world. So we were constantly saying how strange they were. And what Charlie's cartoons were saying is, they're no stranger than we are. In fact, most of his other cartoons pointed out that us out here in the real world are far more cruel to one another than the Addams Family, who adore each other.
Also in the exhibit, there are a number of themes in his work, and one was relationships.
Yes.
And usually the ones that usually capture our attention, I'm sure it's all phases of the relationships that he featured, but is the end of the relationship or when the relationship is going bad. And there's numerous examples in this exhibit of that. One that just cracked me up when I first saw it was Prince Charming at the marriage counselor, and they're complaining, you know, we're not living happily ever after.
Absolutely. I mean, Charlie did a lot of drawings in an area that he referred to as mauled cliches, and living happily ever after is a cliche. And then when it's overused, it's a mauled cliche. And he came from experience in one sense, because he did have one marriage out of the three that was not exactly wonderful, and very difficult, with a woman who was tearing up his artwork and doing bad things. So he certainly was coming from experience when it came to the husband and wife trying to figure out how to get rid of each other as well as possible. We did a book a few years before, probably 8 years ago, that was on relationships called Happily Ever After. And it does take you from the very beginning of Adam and Eve and going right on through the meeting up with each other and the families, and then getting married, and then enjoying life, and then the murder, and then the what to do with the body. And it ends with a subway worker finding skeletons of Adam and Eve and the asp in skeletons on the wall of the subway. So it goes a complete circle. And that's what Charlie did, although he didn't know he did that, because he was not looking back at his entire oeuvre.
My guest today is Kevin Mizoraki, the executive director of the T. and Charles Adams Foundation. The work of cartoonist Charles Adams is on display at the Zero Center in the Brady District. Charles Adams Family and Friends, it's been up for a month. It will continue to be on display through September 27th. If you haven't seen it yet, Friday's Art Crawl in the Brady Art District would be a great opportunity. And Mizoraki will also be back in town a week from this Friday, September 11th, for a lecture at noon at the Zero Center, a brown bag lecture. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. One of the things I love is he captures this mid-century, as he was an artist working in the mid-century, but this sort of mid-century feeling, getting back to the end of the relationship. There's a wonderful, lovely, well-coiffed woman that comes up to, you know, the old-fashioned department store information counter. And for those who remember, you know, being on the escalator and go, you know, women's lingerie, you know, men's ties, that sort of thing. She goes, blunt instruments?
And it's clear, when you look at the relationship drawings, almost all the wives look the same. They're all very solid. And the husbands are usually 2 to 3 feet shorter because they've been beaten down to the ground. And they're, you know, round-shouldered, and the wife is not something you would think about wanting to come home to, right, necessarily, if you were just on the physicalness. And he loved doing that play between the husband and wife. And, you know, again, he didn't have to show the wife with a blunt instrument in her hand chasing the husband. He just had to mention it. And yeah, I think it says a lot. Plus, the drawings are interesting the way he's painted them. He's a very painterly artist, as well as being a cartoonist.
There's also some color works. Yes. One is another famous one where the skier is stopped on the slope, and he's looking at, it, I think, his shush marks, and then he's watching another skier who has apparently gone right through a tree.
Yeah.
With one ski on each side of the tree. That's a very famous cartoon.
That is a black and white one, but it was actually used in an asylum in Ohio about 5 years after he drew it. It was used not as the only way to get in or out of the asylum, but it was a place for people who were confused and needed to spend some time to get well. And it was used under the auspices that if they spent too much time trying to explain it, they basically had a bed for them in the place. So. It was one of those. People spent a lot of time trying to explain that, and it was not necessary to do that.
Yeah.
But the color ones, he's not known for that. He was he worked in black and white. He worked in ink and en grisaille. But he did do 65 color covers for The New Yorker, so there is quite a bit of watercolor work that we do have available to see. So it's unusual, because you don't usually get to see color by Charles Adams.
And when he does color, was it usually for a New Yorker cover?
In particular, he did a lot of advertising as well. But, you know, the New Yorker covers at that time, when they were paying so little for even the cartoons within the magazine, a cover paid them a lot more. And Charlie was not a wealthy man. He worked for a living. He loved what he did, but the color covers certainly gave him a lot more exposure on, you know, a cover of the magazine. And it just became something that everyone did, even if you were an interior cartoonist or a spot cartoonist. Everyone tried for covers, and he was lucky enough to get that many.
Now, was he a staff cartoonist at the New Yorker, or was he like every other cartoonist, just submitting work, and sometimes it was accepted and sometimes rejected?
Yes, he was not on staff. They gave the cartoonists offices there to work in, but they were not work for hire. Charlie worked at home and would come in Tuesday mornings for the artists' meetings with the editor, and that was when they were told your idea is a yay or nay, and then go home and develop it or stay in the office or do whatever. But they had working desks at the New Yorker office, but they were not staff members.
Hmm. Now, what were some of the other themes? So one of the themes that comes up in this show is his appreciation for art. Obviously, as a cartoonist, a lot of times cartoonists are frustrated artists. I don't think that was the case in Adam's case, but he does do a lot of commenting on the state of art as he's seeing it through his cartoons.
He does. He actually went to school for a year at Penn to become an architect. He went to three different colleges and just, you know, knew perfectly well he was biding his time until he could get his foot in the door of the New Yorker. So he had an interest, in particular in architecture. After all, the Adams family house is not a house that is in any town in the United States, aside from the fact that we have pounds of mail proving that it is in every city in the United States. But he made up his own house. He had a friend at another magazine in New York who gave him a lot of architectural detail photographs, and he would splice these together and take a little bit from this picture and a little bit from that and create his own architecture. So that was a fascination, as were the arts anyway, all arts, but in particular artists. And with the coming of modernism, he really enjoyed that. He combined his love of weaponry, castles, architecture, and modern art all got thrown in to get juxtaposition with one another in several of his drawings. So the art was always a fascination for him. And I think probably, if you think back, cartoonists were not considered of the ilk of Monet or Manet. Today, illustration art does have a value that never existed before, and they really were artists as well. So even a cartoonist can become an illustrative artist.
Yeah, and do you see that in the cartoons, that he's taking extra care beyond, you know, the typical line drawings, of adding detail that most didn't at the time?
I think that's, you know, he had a friend who was there before him, who was on his way out of the New Yorker because he was older, named Peter Arno, who did a very bold type of art that was very popular before Charlie came around in the 30s into the 40s. And Charlie became much more of a painterly type of artist. Almost all of his skies are done with washes, and they are extremely painterly. A lot of shadowing, shading, details in drawings that, in particular, or paintings that didn't have a caption, were his favorite pieces that he ever submitted, because to get a joke across without a caption was wonderful. And he did a color version for the cover that was of Notre Dame, which is in the exhibition as well, with the people, all you see is a shadow on the side of the building with all the tourists up on a balcony, and there's one woman looking up at what obviously is a gargoyle has come off the side of the building and is live. But in the background is all of Paris, way, way, way
right,
down.
Right, right.
And he loved that. There's another one in there of the Colosseum that he spent a lot of time on. The details are extraordinary. For a cartoonist, he spent a lot of time on the details.
Yeah, that Colosseum one that you're talking about is in the show, and it really is. There's a lot of detail in there. Another one, you were talking about no captions, where the joke gets, is in Adam's Family one, which is Gomez making cartoon animals, but his animals are a little darker.
Yes, just a little. The shadow on the wall.
Yes.
I believe that's the one you're discussing. Think about that. It just is one of those funny little things that he would come up with and then turn it into a cartoon. We all did that. I grew up knowing that my father showed us how to make rabbits with your hands in front of a light bulb and shadows on the wall. But to even have the Addams Family doing that, which was fun to scare the kids, is like any other normal American family or world family who do that with their children. It's fun to make them squirm.
And another theme that shows up is like occupations, you know, people working in the world. And only in his case, it's Quasimodo looking for a job as a bell ringer.
Right. I mean, everybody needs to have a job. And Quasimodo, you know, read the newspaper. He didn't have a job anymore, so he was looking for a bell ringer job. I also love that he took things like there's one in there of Robinson Crusoe coming home after his long
yes.
journey with, you know, who would ever think that what happened to Robinson Crusoe when he went home, except that his shrew wife answers the door saying, "This better be good, Robinson," as he shows up with a goat next to him, you know. I mean, it just, Charlie had this wonderful little bent side to looking at things that we took for granted, again, the cliches, but things that we really took for granted, and then played those words out to make us laugh at what we were actually saying didn't mean anything to do with what it was intended to be.
Yeah, through the films and the television series, the Addams Family is going to live on, but do you think that new audiences are discovering this lovely, you know, sort of subversive, slightly subversive, intelligent humor that almost all of his cartoons had?
Yes. We do have a musical, and I believe
yes.
it played in Tulsa.
Yes, yes.
It opened on Broadway in 2010, spent a couple of years there. It's in Mexico City. It's around the world. So there is a whole different generational exposure to this. But what's really happening, I think, for the cartoon aspect and the real Addams artwork is that we're working on a film that is a full-length feature animated film of the Addams Family, and that will be in Charlie's hand. So that is how you see those cartoons will be actually animated. And that's a few years down the road until we get the script taken care of and move it along. But that should be a very interesting 21st century look at what works on paper have become, because people don't necessarily read magazines as readily. We have everything online. And so this was one place we really wanted to go with this. We have the ability to translate someone's hand-drawn art into a feature film. We're foolish not to take care of that. So we're very excited about doing it. And it will introduce it to a whole new audience, which then would make sense to have exhibitions of seeing what the original art looked like and what caused this to happen. So both of them are feeding each other. Mm.
Charles Addams, Family and Friends is on display through September 27th at the Zero Center in the Brady District. Kevin Misuraki, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rich.
Kevin Misuraki is the executive director of the T. and Charles Addams Foundation, which handles the work of cartoonist Charles Addams. You can see the cartoonist's work on display, Charles Addams Family and Friend, on display at the Zero Center in the Brady District through September 27th. Just a reminder, the Brady Art Crawl takes place this Friday, and the following Friday, September 11th, Misuraki will be lecturing on Addams' work at noon at the Zero Center in the Brady District. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you want to keep up to date with everything going on, visit our website at publicradiotulsa.org. If you'd like to catch up with some of our recent episodes, you can visit studiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.